Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions for difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent five, including this one, just about as soon as we get off the air, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about self-esteem. And like often we do when we do these shows, we're going to define it first so that we know what we're talking about. So I think that our first question is going to be, what is self-esteem? How do we define it? What is it? What is it? What does it consist of? Oh, I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. How nice. And, we've got lots of good answers, too. Cool. Sarah says that self-esteem, and a lot of people agree, is your subconscious opinion of yourself. Your subconscious opinion of yourself. Not the one that you necessarily talk about, the one that's inner, the subconscious opinion of yourself. Mm-hmm. And Calvin and others are saying that it's self-esteem is the internalized opinions of respected others about you. That's interesting. The internalized, what now is your subconscious, opinions of respected others about you. What other people think about you, well, I suppose your self-esteem, has become internalized. You've taken that as fact. You've taken that as who you are. Yeah, I think that's, we're getting a lot of agreement on that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is an interesting point, too. We're starting to talk about self-esteem as though it is something that is formed, and that's it. And Lindsay is correct, and she says that self-esteem is not stagnant. It can change according to your confidence under the circumstances. Good point. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. Self-esteem is not stagnant. Not always the same. Not always the same level. It can change according to confidence under the circumstances. Mm-hmm. I'm very confident that I can handle this. Therefore, my self-esteem, my confidence in myself, really, is very high, very positive. And sometimes you're in a situation where, you ever hear the expression, over your head? Now, I know this is a global show, and it's kind of an American expression, but it means that you really don't exactly know what you're doing. It's a little beyond you. It's a little something that you're not too sure about. Well, that might affect your self-esteem at the moment. You know, I'm getting some disagreement. People are saying that, and certainly that's certainly fine, that self-esteem is really your subconscious, as Sarah said, your subconscious opinion of yourself, and it can be formed by internalized opinions of respected others, like Calvin said. But people are saying that what I'm talking about when I say that things, that your self-esteem level changes according to the circumstances, is not your self-esteem, but your confidence level. I can accept that. Mm-hmm. It's a real good point. And they are not really synonymous with the other, are they? They're not the same. So your self-esteem and your confidence, they're similar, but maybe confidence is the thing that is not always the same under the circumstances. But it could affect your self-esteem. What do you think? Yeah. I mean, some agreement and also some disagreement that that's not the same thing. Good point. Mm-hmm. You know, Donnie says it very well. Self-esteem is a blend of both positive and negative thoughts and opinions about your worth as a person. Self-esteem is a blend of both positive and negative thoughts and opinions about your worth as a person. Whether or not I'm important, whether or not I am capable, whether or not I'm a good person, maybe. Yeah. About your worth as a person, your self-esteem. How you feel about yourself? I think so. So we've now decided that it's really self-esteem is pretty much what you think of yourself, right? It's your subconscious opinion. It could be internalized opinions of others. It's similar to confidence. And it's a blend of both positive and negative thoughts about your worth as a person. Fair? You think we've pretty much defined it? I think we kind of have. I think those are all very good points. And we got a lot of agreement. Thank you for all of your participation. So now I think we should go on now that we have decided what self-esteem is. Let's talk about how we can recognize someone. Let's start with negative because that really impacts the group too, doesn't it? Negative self-esteem, low self-esteem, will impact the group maybe even more definitely than positive or high self-esteem. Because it's how people react to others, right? So how can we recognize someone with negative or low self-esteem so that we can see what's happening with them? What's really going on? We need to recognize it. You know, Joyce and others are saying, that, this is a very good point, that they hate, that people with low self-esteem hate themselves, so they are haters of other people. People with low self-esteem hate themselves, so they are haters of other people. You know, I think that's a very good point. We're getting a lot of agreement. Thank you for your participation. Yes, if you've got real low self-esteem, you don't think much of yourself, right? You probably do hate yourself. You don't think that you're, as Donnie said, that you don't think much of your worth as a person. And that is projected in your dealings with other people. People with low self-esteem hate themselves, so they are haters of other people. They project their negative life view, their negative self-esteem, onto others. You know, this is probably part of that they really hate other people. Adam says that people with low self-esteem could be spotted because they are resentful and always feel that other people have a better life. Well, yeah, because they don't think that they have much worth, and they are resentful and always feel that other people have a better life. Good point. They have low self-esteem. They don't think that their life is worth much. And they look around at those of us with high self-esteem, which probably most of us have, and they go, wow, they've got a better life. Well, there's a reason for that, because we don't hate everybody. Yeah. Martin says that, and this is kind of a theme that's going, Martin says that people with low self-esteem are always negative to ideas and finding fault with the opinions of others. Always negative to ideas and finding fault with the opinions of others. They're not much of team players. I got to tell you, this is a very good point, because they don't think their ideas are worth anything. They don't think yours are either. Fault with the opinions of others. You know, Petra and others are saying that that's true, but it's primarily because people with negative self-esteem have no practical or workable ideas or opinions. They can't make their own good opinion, so they are negative to the ideas and find fault with the opinions of others. they don't come up with something positive because they're not positive people, and they shoot down what other people are trying to accomplish, the ideas that other people have. Good point. No practical workable ideas or opinions. Mm-hmm. Kevin has put this very well. He says that people with low self-esteem expect and encourage failure. You know, we've talked about, people using the word self-fulfilling prophecy. And we have talked about self-fulfilling prophecy on prior shows. By the way, if you'd like to hear prior shows, last five archived at our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Mm-hmm. And we talked about self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's when you come with the preconceived notion, which is very similar, the preconceived notion that you're going to fail, and you do because you were certain of it, and you act so that it comes true. Self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. People with low self-esteem expect and encourage failure. They're sure it's not going to work because nothing ever works for them. Yeah. You see people like that? Quite a few people are using an expression that does indeed undoubtedly show low self-esteem. I'm not sure that it's not kind of an Americanism, and this is a global show, but the expression is, if not for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Ever hear anybody say that? If not for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. And that's a sign of people who expect and encourage failure, because they're pretty darn sure that it's plain ordinary not going to work. And that's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And Grace says that instead of reasoning, they resort to bullying tactics. When people have low self-esteem, they expect failure. Instead of reasoning, they resort to bullying tactics. We've talked about bullying in prior shows, too, and also about civility in the group and in amongst the participants. Very important. And, yes, a lot of people who are overtly obnoxious, they're bullies, B-U-L-L-Y, bullies, they undoubtedly have low self-esteem. And they're trying to make other people have low self-esteem, too. Hey, misery loves company. Mm-hmm. And Mackenzie says that low or negative opinions of others about, they have low opinions of others even within their, others have low opinions. I looked at this and I went, what does that say? Yes, I'm sorry. That other people in the community have a low opinion of their character. And they don't get any respect. You can ask around, even amongst their own community, that other people don't respect them and they don't think much of them. Mm-hmm. Low self-esteem. Well, if self-esteem is partially the opinions of people you respect that you internalize, which we decided during our definition part, then probably having people in your community not respect you and think not so highly of you is a good indication of low self-esteem and not much character. Mm-hmm. Fred says that people with low self-esteem don't respect themselves, so they are disrespectful to others. They don't respect themselves, so they are disrespectful to others. Mm-hmm. The self-esteem. Now, I think we've pretty much talked about people who are negative and who have low self-esteem. Let's turn it around and talk about the people who have high self-esteem, who are positive. Mm-hmm. How do we know them? How do we know when somebody has positive, really good self-esteem? Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people are using the word confidence, and it is very similar, isn't it? It's a confidence is a projection of positive self-esteem, right? You're confident. You're confident in your abilities. You think quite a bit of yourself. And you project that as confidence. And people are using the word expertise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And capability. Correct. Mm-hmm. So that is positive self-esteem. Vicki and others are saying that positive, high self-esteem type people are willing to reach out and work together. They're not worried that somebody else is going to have it better than they are or something. They're confident in their abilities and that they can contribute to a team, right? Willing to reach out and work together. In fact, Anthony says people with high self-esteem are confident in their abilities and expect the best efforts of others. Mm-hmm. Confidence of their abilities, and they give their best effort. Therefore, they expect the best effort of others. Mm-hmm. They expect other people to rise to the occasion. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't have as high a self-esteem, they expect people to handle it, to be part of the team, to hold up their end, give it their best shot. Mm-hmm. Jayden says the people with high self-esteem are generous with praise and willing to share. Generous with praise and willing to share. I think that's actually true. I suppose it's because, and I know we've discussed this before, I am quite a believer in recognizing people's efforts and saying thank you and recognizing how well people are doing and how much time and effort they're putting in and saying thank you. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to praise the participants so that they feel enthusiastic, so that they know that they're getting somewhere, so that they know that their effort is appreciated. Very, very important that your effort be appreciated. Yeah. So generous with praise and willing to share. Very, very important. Mm-hmm. And let's see. Harjeet says the opinions of others in the community that the person is of good character. We talked about the opinions of others being rather important. Yeah. And it's important to have people have a good opinion of you. Gives you high self-esteem because it's a blend of opinions, remember? Mm-hmm. Opinion of others in the community that you are of good character. Good point, Harjeet. Mm-hmm. You know, Richard and others are also pointing out that people with high self-esteem make good leaders because they're confident of success. We expect success. Won't take anything less. Now, sometimes we have to modify during the process, but we expect to have a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. And usually we do. In fact, almost always. Mm-hmm. If you expect a successful outcome and we all rise to the occasion, yeah, we'll be fine. Good leader because you're confident of success. Mm-hmm. You know, Shamara has a really good way of putting it. She says that people with high self-esteem are problem solvers, not problem makers. Nicely put. Problem solvers, not problem makers. Mm-hmm. We have high self-esteem. We're in a leadership position, or we're part of a team, which, you know, teams could or could not have a leader, depending on how many people. And we are going to be problem solvers. There's always some sort of problem that shows up, but we're going to solve it. And not have problems be of our own making, which is very, very important because, you know, you don't want people in the group to have such low self-esteem that they're starting to bully somebody else or they're starting to not be willing to participate in a positive manner. So we've now decided what self-esteem is. We've decided how to spot negative and how to spot positive. Let's talk about how to encourage positive self-esteem and discourage the negative. Because on this show, we are practical. We want to know what to do about it, not just the theory. So what should we do about it? How can we encourage positive self-esteem in people? After all, self-esteem, we decided, was subconscious, but it manifests itself in the group, right? And discourage negative impacts. Mm-hmm. Discourage the negative self-esteem. You know, this is a very good point. Misha and others are saying that in order to do it on a practical level, you have to encourage the rules of civility and respect. Encourage the rules of civility and respect to prevent the atmosphere and the group dynamic from becoming negative. In order to encourage positive and discourage negative, you need to enforce the rules of civility and respect to prevent the atmosphere and the group dynamic from becoming negative. Good point. You know, we talk quite a bit about having rules of civility. And, you know, you can have them any way you'd like. You can say them at the very beginning. It might be a group that knows them already, and therefore you don't have to say them. They are tacitly understood. Personally speaking, I have actual written rules that I expect people to adhere to, and they're mostly civility rules, respect rules. We will not bully anyone. We will not be rude. We will let everyone take their turn and have their full amount of turn for speaking. We'll keep track of the speaking times. And like that, encourage the rules of civility so that people are equal. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, once you don't want to go down a negative path. Once it gets out of hand, it's hard to get back. Mm-hmm. You have to stop people from being... Yeah, people are actually giving me examples. Some of the examples, thank you for all of your participation, are more like sarcastic. But you don't want people to roll their eyes even. This is not civil. This is not rude. They didn't roll their eyes on you when you spoke. Yeah. No, we're going to enforce the rules of civility and respect. And that will indeed prevent the group dynamic from turning negative. Mm-hmm. Kirby says you need to praise practical, creative thinking as a group. Yeah, we all have to be proud of ourselves. And the leader has to praise. And people need to applaud. You know, you praise practical, creative thinking as a group. Because it's hard. And we had to force ourselves. But we did it. We came up with several practical alternatives. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Helen says, and Helen, a lot of people use the word team building. Helen says to emphasize team building. That will help quite a bit because when you've got teams, everybody needs to pull their weight. And the positive people will, just by the idea of having them as team members, force the negative people to act in a proactive and towards a successful outcome manner. Mm-hmm. You might even say that they will raise their self-esteem, kind of like having a mentor. They will be able to rise to the occasion better because somebody's depending on them and somebody's watching, you know? And that's really kind of the key to it. Yeah, emphasize team building. Osmar says, encourage research and the acquisition of new knowledge leading to new opinions. Well, if your self-esteem is an opinion about yourself, and about which might even be connected with something in the world, if you encourage research and the acquisition of new knowledge, it leads to new opinions, and it raises your self-esteem. Yeah. Because you found something out. And you go, well, you know, I can be an expert in this. I know something. I know how to handle this. raises your self-esteem, doesn't it? Carolyn and others are making the point that you need to treat all participants as equally important. For me, that is very important because there's some people who have the feeling kind of subconsciously that they're like second-class citizens. They feel always kind of like other people. I guess that's the resentful part that we were talking about before, that everybody else's opinion seems to matter more and they're more, that other people are being treated in a more important manner. And they get kind of like, oh, I'm a second-class citizen. I'm not good enough and like that. So it's important to treat all participants as equally important. Mm-hmm. So that they all have a positive attitude about the group, about the process that we're going through. Mm-hmm. Thomas says to never dismiss a sincere idea or opinion before group discussion and never be dismissive. Yes, that's quite a few people agreeing with the dismissive part. That's where you kind of brush off somebody's opinion or an idea, especially if it's in front of the whole group, which would be embarrassing, right? That's not very civil. That's not a proper, that's not equally important. I want you to remember, even if you think it is the dumbest thing you ever heard, if it is a sincere idea or opinion, don't let the group get sidetracked too long because you don't want to go off into areas that have no workable or practical application. But it's been put on the table, and unless the person is a complete crackpot and you just don't want them to be in the group and they need to be replaced, it needs to be respected before it's laid to rest. Did you notice I didn't actually use the word rejected? Because nobody wants the thing to be rejected. No. Because rejected is, well, it leads to low self-esteem. Yeah. So never be dismissive where you're kind of like, oh my God, what kind of a stupid thing is that? No, 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 no. Mm-hmm. Lori says that even if the group agrees upon a different path, which they probably have, you need to praise and be respectful of all ideas. Praise and be respectful of all ideas. You know, sometimes, if you've got a fairly complex issue, the group decides to go on a different path because it seemed better. But when you get down to it, when you get the practicalities, when you hit real life, a different path was really what was needed. So never be rude. You need to praise and be respectful of all ideas because you're liable to be revisiting them for one thing. And for another thing, we're all participants together. We're all on the same team. No call to be rude to anybody. And we, of course, enforce that as the leader with the participants. Mm-hmm. Ratana says that you need to show everyone equal respect, and if there are problems, then discuss them calmly and reasonably during the time out. Good point. It's dismissive to embarrass someone in front of the whole group. They were sincere. Now, maybe they put forth an opinion that they didn't think through very well. But that's when we, as a group, decide that that's not exactly what we had in mind. But it's very important to show everyone equal respect, and if there are problems, then discuss them calmly and reasonably during the time out. Good point, Ratana. Very important not to hold someone out to ridicule. Right? And that is indeed why we do the timeouts and why Recipe for Peace Now advocates using food to keep people in the room and to keep them talking and to keep them circulating with the other people so that we can find some common ground. Yeah. And we can find that we're people, like everybody else's people. Mm-hmm. And then we can get together and we can find agreement, maybe just this once for this particular issue, because we all want the same outcome. But it's a start. And next time there is an issue and we find ourselves needing to work together, we'll know that we can. That's an important start, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have indeed hit the recipe portion of our show, because that's what we do during the timeouts. I always say the food is a tool, not really because we are hungry, although it might be dinner time, but because we need something to keep everyone in the room. We need to have a time out when things look like they're starting to get a little bit uncivil or dismissive or disrespectful. We need a time out when we've hit an impasse. Mm-hmm. We need a time out occasionally just to get off our, you know, and stretch our legs and walk around and have something to eat or drink. Mm-hmm. Makes for a more comfortable, convivial atmosphere. And that's the goal of it. The food is a tool to get us all to do these things, to get us talking. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to say the same thing that I say on all the shows. But there are some new people, and it bears repeating even to those of you who thank you very much for coming back. We had lots of participation. And if you don't believe me, you can look at, did I say prior shows? The last five archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Every time you have food, you need to take a survey. You need to ask the participants if they have any food allergies, food prohibitions, or religious prohibitions to some sort of food. Very, very important. You don't want anybody to have a bad time. And you will communicate this to everybody so that we all know not to bring peanut butter or whatever it is that someone is unable to eat. Mm-hmm. Also, if you're going to have food and you need to tell everybody this, you need to label the food, not with the title, what it is, meatloaf, no, what is in it, so that we can decide if we can eat it. Very, very simple but true. You have to be able to look at it. Now, those of you who have been here before, thank you for coming back. I love seeing all of you. And the new people, I always think, probably because I hate to run out of food and have a bad party, but I always think that the host, which is usually us, should have some extra food. And the extra food is usually the safe recipe. Now, what makes a recipe safe? It doesn't have too many ingredients. The ingredients can basically be seen. They're not real hidden, although we're going to label everything, right? Even seasonings and stuff get put on the label. People ask what kind of a label. It's just like an index card right in front of the food that says what's in it, just a listing of ingredients. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's a good conversation starter. People pick up the card and they read it and they say, who is this? My goodness, that's so interesting. I never thought of putting nutmeg in that, you see? And then it goes from there and you've already bonded. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have, I think that we should have a safe recipe. A safe recipe doesn't have too many ingredients. I've taken my survey, so I know that my participants can eat it. And when we have the list of ingredients, pretty much everybody that I'm dealing with will have eaten those ingredients before, right? Yeah. And so they're familiar with them. They know if they can. So, and of course, you know, I'm in the United States, and this is a global show, so your safe ingredient might be different than mine. Mm-hmm. Something that's readily available and you think most people like, and so you don't run out of food, which I really hate doing. Because, you know, people bring food to the potlucks, or they buy it or whatever and bring it. Even that needs labeling. But everybody's idea of how much people are going to eat is different. Mm-hmm. So let's do an onion and Parmesan cheese rice dish. It's kind of a pilaf. Very, very delicious. Is it a main dish? Could be. But, you know, everybody, I'm big on the grazing theory. Everybody takes what they want, not too many. Not too much. I don't ration it in any way, of course. But most people don't take too much and they taste everything. Very good idea. Because then you get to talk to everybody. Good. Okay. So we're going to have three nice big pats of butter. What is that, about 3 ounces? Do not use the fake stuff. It's just not going to come out well. This is going to have lots of onions because it's called an onion and Parmesan rice pilaf, right? So we're going to have 3 onions. Yay. Then we're going to chop up pretty fine. 3 garlic cloves. We're going to crush. You think I use too much garlic? Put in less. A package of rice. You like the brown rice. It always looks very nice with this. And, you know, brown rice is a little bit firmer and has a little bit of kind of a nutty texture. I like it. I like it in a pilaf. I'm not fond of it under things. I think white is often more tasty as a base because, quite frankly, it doesn't have that much taste in and of itself. But this is a dish all by itself, so I'm going to say brown rice. Whatever on earth you've got, use it. Those boxes are, what, about a pound? So it's about a pound. And let's have 5 cups of vegetable stock. We're going to make this basically vegetarian. You don't have vegetable stock. You can use chicken stock, but remember that makes it non-vegetarian. Let's have 2 cups of peas. If you are a finer person than I am, you will use fresh. Let's face it, I'm going to use frozen. I'm going to use it because it is easier, cheaper, and readily available to me. Mm-hmm. And frozen peas, quite frankly, they're quite fresh. They really taste nice. If you're going to use frozen, however, you need to thaw them and pat them dry. Mm-hmm. And let's have 3/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese. Any kind of cheese will do as long as, well, not any kind. Don't use the kind with the veins. But it needs to be a fairly firm type so that we can shred it. And it can keep a little bit of its consistency when it's heated up. Parmesan's perfect for it. And I don't know about using other colors besides white. You know, you eat with your eyes. People are asking about cheddar. I think cheddar would be fine as a cheese. I mean, it would melt and everything. It would be nice. But it will make your dish kind of orange in color. If you think that's okay, go for it. I think it's more aesthetically pleasing with the white cheese. Okay. So what we're going to do, we're going to melt our butter. We're going to add the onion and garlic, of course, and cook them until they're nice and soft and golden. What does it take? 5 minutes. It's not very long. So you've got this pan, and you've got all the onions and the garlic. They've all turned kind of translucent and yummy, and it smells really good. Take your rice, add it to the pot, and put in the vegetable stock. Mm-hmm. Stir it all around. Give it a nice stir so that you don't have stuff stuck to the bottom. And bring it to a boil. Another nice stir just to make sure. Reduce the heat and simmer it. Now, don't cover it to simmer it because what we're doing is we're cooking the rice, right? And we want to cook it until the liquid is absorbed into the rice and we've used the stock instead of water for the taste so that it's delicious. Mm-hmm. We've now made the rice, correct? The liquid is gone, and you've got a nice pan full of rice that you've mixed the onion and the garlic and the grease, you know, the butter through. So it all smells yummy, and it's all mixed through. Now we're going to stir in the peas. And we're going to cover it, and we're going to kind of cook it on a very, very low heat. We're going to cook it for about less than 10 minutes, more than 5. We're going to give it a stir occasionally, too, to make sure that everything is hot and incorporated. Mm-hmm. You know, the frozen peas are really kind of cooked if they've thawed. Remember, they need to be thawed. If not, you're going to have to cook this long and the rice may catch. So the frozen peas are perfect. If you've got fresh peas, well, you're going to have to boil them first. You have to cook them first so that they're not, so they're edible.
Yeah.
We only cook the peas until the rice is tender, because what we had is we've absorbed the liquid, but it takes a little bit to kind of fluff up.
Mm-hmm.
We've got it all. We've got the rice mixture. We've got the peas and the onions and the garlic and the fat. It's all been on the stove for a while. The liquid has simmered out. It is now fluffy rice. This is our big moment. Add the Parmesan. And mix it through so that it's nice and cheesy. It's nice and melted. It's all yummy and delicious. And that's why you want to use a fairly tough white cheese like that. You're insisting, and some people are insisting they like to use cheddar and other orange cheeses. It'll be pretty. I think mine's prettier because it's lighter in color. But you could do as you please. Yeah. So that is our onion and Parmesan, and it's just delicious and it's very easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
You could even make this in the room, which will make it smell very beautiful, and have people watch you do it, because you could talk while it's boiling and simmering off and like that.
Uh-huh.
And then people kind of have pride of place that they helped make this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our safe recipe. Now let's go for our adventure recipe. Our adventure recipe is going to be potato and ham quiche. Now, I must confess that I do not do baking very much. Do you notice those of you who have been here quite a bit, and thank you for coming, thank you for all of your participation, that I hardly ever have anything that's like a dessert with a crust or something. I'm not much of a baker of crusts and pies and other things. And yes, people are already writing in that you can use a store-bought crust. This is true. I'm afraid that is exactly what I do when I do a regular quiche. I buy a store-bought crust. Most of the time you have to bake them a little bit, kind of put a little butter on them and bake them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't mess with the pastry part, really, because I'm kind of busy is what it really amounts to. And I like a fast recipe, something that can just be put together. This recipe was shown to me by a friend and a participant at the potlucks. Man, it was fantabulous. It doesn't exactly hold together as well as one of those commercial crusts, but then again, it doesn't taste like cardboard either. Yeah, this is the trick. So the potatoes are really hash browns that we're going to make the crust out of. Oh, you wouldn't believe how yummy it is. And it looks really pretty, and it's firm enough. I mean, it makes a pie wedge. It really does. So, we're going to actually use frozen hash browns. You want to grate the potatoes, go for it. But in the United States, which is very fortunate, it all comes frozen, which is great. And so we're going to have 3 cups of frozen shredded hash browns, thaw them absolutely thoroughly, and dry them off.
Mm-hmm.
Dry off the excess water. You don't do that, you are going to have soggy. So, 3 cups shredded hash browns, come in a big bag. You dry them and you pat out the excess water. 1/3 cup of butter that we're going to melt. Do not use margarine. Let's have 1 cup of fully cooked. Did you hear the word cooked? Yes. Fully cooked diced ham.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's ham and potatoes. Let's have 1 whole cup of shredded. Let's use cheddar on this one. You can use Parmesan. Parmesan's a little bit hard. So I think the cheddar is more delicious, and it goes nice with the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And a nice red pepper that we're going to devein and de-seed and dice up. Nice small pieces, please. 2 eggs. Yeah, that's all you need. Just hold it together. And about 1/2 cup of milk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whole milk.
Mm-hmm.
So we've now patted the hash browns dry, right? They are thawed, and we have actually, I usually use a paper towel. You actually pat them really dry to get rid of the moisture. Now you make like a crust. You take your hash browns and you press it onto the bottom and up the sides of a 9-inch pie plate. And you take your lovely melted butter, you drizzle it all around. You now have a crust. It's fantabulous. We're going to put it in the oven at 425 for about half an hour. Just bake it. You didn't have to roll it. You didn't have to mix anything. This is a fantastic crust recipe for lots of stuff. Just take my word for it. I know not for real pie, but for any kind of a savory like this. Mm-hmm. So you now have a browned, delicious, firm hash brown pie crust. Mm-hmm. You've baked it uncovered at 425 for about half an hour. Now, you've taken it out. We combine the ham and the cheese and the pepper. Just give them a whisk through. And we're going to, these are the dry items. And you might as well put them into the crust first, in all truth and honesty, because we're going to pour the liquid over it, and it'll all kind of float around. It'll be fine. Yeah. So put the ham, the cheese, and the pepper into the crust. And now we're going to beat the eggs, the milk, maybe a little salt and pepper, and we're going to pour it over the ham and the cheese and the pepper, right? We're just going to pour the liquid on top. Let's reduce the heat to the oven to about 350. Because it doesn't need to be so hot for this, because we're not browning it. We're baking it kind of firmly like eggs. Mm-hmm. Put it in the oven, uncovered, half an hour. You know to use a toothpick to insert, and if it comes out clean, it's done. You've got it. Oh, it's very popular. It is as firm as a regular quiche, really, because you've made the crust browned, you've baked it. And it's just delicious. People love it. And, of course, if you are people like I have people that come and they need seconds, and I'm always pleased to have that, you just make two. Mm-hmm. Also, you do know that if you've got any kind of a, I'm going to call it a custard. It's really a quiche, though. But these kinds of things, I think this of all kinds of things. I think it of casseroles, too. When you've got something that needs to be cut into wedges, you let it stand for about 10 minutes to firm it up before you cut it. Yes, that's it. That is our potato and ham quiche. And the potatoes were on the outside, which is really kind of cool, huh? And, of course, we make the filling. Delicious. What makes this an adventure recipe? Well, first of all, it's the ham. Because a lot of people do not eat pork. They have a dietary prohibition or religious prohibition against pork. Just don't eat it. Mm-hmm. So that makes it an adventure recipe. You must ask around. And also, people are saying the cheese and the dairy. Yes, these are both really, well, this one even more so. The other one had cheese. They're both very dairy. And, of course, you would have taken the survey and asked if people have any prohibitions to dairy. They are dairy intolerant. And if they are, well, this is the adventure recipe. It can be there. It won't make them sick, but it needs to be carefully labeled that it's got all kinds of dairy in it. It's got cheese and it's got milk and it's got eggs and like that. Yeah. So that is our adventure recipe. And I see that our time together is nearly up. I hope you learned something. I always learn something and I hope you do too. These shows are unscripted. They just go however the questions go, which is really wonderful. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for all of your ideas. Thank you for having high self-esteem and being confident and coming and talking and sending questions and opinions and like that. If you would like to contact us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. The last five shows, they're archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. This one, just as soon as we get off the air, it goes on quite quickly. All of the shows are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. recipe for peace now. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. I hope you learned something. Thank you for being here, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.